In 2016, American author Gary Steingart got on a Greyhound bus for a trip across America. His four-month journey happened in the shadow of the US presidential race, a race that, as we now know, saw Donald Trump end up as President of the United States. In Gary's new book, Lake Success, his protagonist, a deluded Wall Street millionaire called Barry, takes that same bus trip as he looks to escape his failing business, his crumbling marriage, and his autistic son. Gary Steingart, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Can you take me back to 2016? Why did you take this Greyhound bus trip?
Yeah, why did I? It was a painful four-month trip, so, you know, you're welcome, audience. I suffer from my art. I wanted to write about a hedge fund guy, and I spent 4 years hanging out with them, and which itself was a pretty brutal process, especially for my liver. But I decided to sort of, I wanted to have a character who was a hedge fund manager, and I wanted to get him as far away from his money as possible. And Greyhound is the most traumatic form of transport in America. And I decided to put him on a cross-country journey in a way to sort of see, if you take away all the money, what's left? Is there anything left of this person? And also, I think I wanted to explore, I mean, you know, there's this sort of consensus that there are these bubbles in America where you're either in the interior or on the coasts, and never the twain shall meet. And so I decided to sort of hop on the bus and head into the, to see the rest of the country.
It's kind of a romantic idea, you know, getting on a bus and going on this big journey. But I'm guessing in reality, maybe not so enjoyable.
Yes and no. I mean, the Greyhound is, you learn certain rules, like you don't sit next to the bathroom. You don't sit next to anyone opening up a can of sardines. It's a complicated ecosystem. But I'll say also this, that, you know, there are these large windows and you get a kind of view onto America as you pass through the country. And the country is absolutely gorgeous, from the foothills of the Carolinas to the mesas of Arizona. I mean, it's just this incredible country. And, you know, given the political difficulties that we're in, it kind of makes you appreciate all the more this incredible landscape.
Yeah, because you were getting a view to America at this very pivotal time in American history. When you got on this bus, Gary, the presidential race was underway. Did you believe, any part of you believed that Donald Trump could become president?
No, not at all. And, you know, when I got on the hound, as we call it, or the dog, in June of 2016 in New York City, I, of course, thought that Hillary would win the election. But I'll say this, when I got off the hound in San Diego in late September, I was already looking at Canadian real estate because it seemed like things had changed. Not so much, I mean, people were still predicting that Hillary would win, but everyone I met, or almost everyone I met along the trip, was telling me, don't be so sure, you know, and it seemed like that the people outside in New York had a very different conception of how this race would work out.
That's so interesting, because I know after the election, people said the media didn't cover the people outside those big cities, but you really had a front seat view to that on that journey.
Yeah, I mean, people were telling me, you know, well, she's not even going to win Pennsylvania. And this is, you know, was considered a pretty solid Democratic state. And they were right and I was wrong. So there was really something to learn there. But it was also, I mean, in many ways, it was a hopeful ride. I met some lovely people who, you know, a lot of first generation college students going across state lines because that's where their college was. And, you know, but at the same time, I also met my first white supremacists who got on board talking about crucifying Muslims and Jews and saying very racist things in front of a bus that was mostly people of color. And so this was kind of a preview. This was 2016, the first summer of Trump. It was kind of a preview of the way politics would head in this country up to the very devastating events of the last couple of weeks.
So, Gary, this has all kind of found its way into your novel, Lake Success. In this book, we see not Gary, but Barry get...
Big difference there.
...get on a bus. Barry Cohen, he is, I think fair to say, a pretty flawed character. Can you introduce us to Barry?
Sure. I mean, Barry, when I researched my hedge fund protagonists, I hung out with a lot of people, maybe, I don't know, more than a dozen, I would say, over the course of 4 years. And a couple of characteristics fell into place for almost all of them. Many of them grew up either poor or sort of lower middle class. They all had a chip on their shoulder. They had difficult relationships with their parents, usually with their both mother and father. And they had a kind of affect where they couldn't quite connect with people. And all these three things sort of go into the character of Barry. Barry grows up on the edge of New York City, right at the very last part of Queens. His father is a schmuck, to put it bluntly. His mother died when he was very young, and he had trouble making friends as a child, and then taught himself what he calls friend moves, which is his way of sort of running a computer program to introduce himself to people.
Say,
So
oh,
there's both.
isn't the weather nice today? Wasn't that an interesting thing that happened at the sporting field this week? That kind of chit chat, right?
Exactly. Did you go to the mall this weekend? Yes or no? And then a response to that. So, he's flawed. I didn't want to make him entirely unsympathetic, but I did want the journey to be one where he is confronted with the fact that even though he thinks he keeps saying, "Well, I'm a Republican, but I'm socially liberal and fiscally conservative," that's sort of his mantra, that he's actually a liberal at heart, a libertine at heart as well. But I kind of wanted the journey to show that he was in a way complicit in what is happening in America just by dint of being in an industry, the hedge fund industry, which contributes so much to the social inequality in America while contributing so little to the social space in general.
I did laugh because he gets on this bus, he has no phone, he gets rid of his credit cards, but he does have a suitcase full of rare watches.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing that I found is that, people at this sort of income bracket, you don't really know what to do with your money. There's just too much of it. And it creates a kind of boredom, I think. And a lot of this boredom is taken out in public policy initiatives, many of which are incredibly stupid. So people think, well, I made one or good trades and I made some money off of that. And even though I've lost money since then, I'm still a genius. And so maybe I'll figure out. So one movement, for example, in New York is charter schools, figuring out schools for impoverished kids. And they're usually not that great at doing this kind of stuff. So Barry, of course, is a watch collector. So he wants to start something he calls the Urban Watch Fund, which buys Rolexes for kids in the ghettos of New York and other cities and helps
Just
them
what
take care
they
of their
need.
first. Just what they need, exactly what they need. And he has another initiative called Billionaire Trading Cards, which have, pictures of billionaires on the cards, and in the back you have all their statistics. So, and this is supposed to encourage kids in the ghetto to become billionaires themselves, So these really stupid ideas that have absolutely no bearing on reality. And as he gets on the hound, he actually encounters reality. And I don't, he tries to process it, and at first he thinks he's doing great, but as the book continues and his money runs out, he realizes he's not very good at being without his money.
Do you like Barry?
I like Barry in some ways. I find that Barry, I mean, I grew up somewhat poor in the edges of New York. We were immigrants. I learned English later as a child. So I find that kind of connection to him. I went to a very competitive math and science high school. I was terrible at math and science, but that's kind of where I went. And it was, overwhelmingly the immigrants or the children of immigrants. And, I also wanted to one day work on Wall Street and have all these. I thought money was going to be the solution to all my problems. Obviously, I became a writer, so there wasn't going to be any money. But, when I went to my high school reunion recently, I realized that almost everyone I know from that school went into finance or tech, but finance was a huge representation. And I realized just how much these kids were still struggling to please their parents. And I think that's the story of a lot of the hedge fund people I've met, and that's certainly the story of Barry. And that doesn't excuse him for the kind of things that he has done in his life, but it gives him, I think, a little bit of depth.
You were mentioning your background there, Gary. You were born in Russia. You immigrated to America in 1979. This is the first time you've written a book where your hero hasn't been Russian. Are you slowly escaping the need to write autobiography?
Well, I wrote an autobiography called Little Failure. And the reason I think I wrote that was to try to get rid of as much material about myself as possible, because if you read that book, you kind of know everything you ever need to know about me, probably even more things that you need to know about me. And so it was a kind of fire sale, you know, everything about me must go. And I think it did kind of liberate me a little bit to write about a character that wasn't a Soviet Jew. I mean, Barry Cohen is still Jewish, so, you know, baby steps away from that. But definitely my first story that's not where the main character is not an immigrant. Although I will say that his wife, who also has some of the chapters, her name is Seema, and she is the daughter of immigrants from India. So there is a kind of immigrant thread, you know, woven into the book, but not a Russian or post-Soviet immigrant thread.
Baby steps, as you say.
Baby steps.
Barry and Seema have a son. He's 3 at the start of the book, and he has autism. And it strikes me that for Barry, this is something that he can't buy his way out of.
Yeah.
How is he coping? How are both of them coping with their son's diagnosis?
Yeah, I mean, this is an interesting thing that I kind of encountered, is that, you know, all these guys who came out of, well, not perfect circumstances, class-wise and in other ways. They all kind of thought, okay, now I've made my $100 million. Now I can sort of buy my way into the perfect life. And so the idea is, and I think Barry says something like this about Seema, is that now I've married a younger woman with great eggs. She's beautiful. She went to Yale Law School, so she's very smart. So genetically, we're going to hit the jackpot, and we're going to have 3 brilliant, beautiful kids. And then, you know, he gets thrown a curveball. His son Shiva is autistic and nonverbal, so he can't really communicate with him. And Barry's not great at communicating with kids to begin with. And this is just way too much for him. He can't handle anything short of what he perceives to be perfection. But Seema, who is in many ways a gentler character, is herself, I think, so ambitious and so mindful of perfection. And she also wants to please her immigrant parents so much that even she can't handle the fact that her kid is autistic and doesn't tell anyone about the fact that he's on the spectrum and doesn't even tell her parents that he is autistic. And so they're both these characters who came together to create the perfect family, the perfect life. And they realize once Shiva is born, and even though, I mean, I think they both love him very much, and Seema, you know, devotes most of her time to caring for him, so she's not a cold mother. She really wants to be connected to him. And Barry, in his own way, is not a cold father either. He wants to have a connection with his child. But once he flees on his Greyhound journey of self-discovery, it's Seema, of course, who's left to take care of her son. And I think they all have a kind of journey. And I think Shiva himself, you know, who starts at age 3, he's nonverbal, and without giving too much away, even he has a very deep, I think, journey, especially by the end of the book.
This story touched me so much, Gary, and I really admire what you've done in this book, because we've talked about how silly some of the concept is, you know, Barry and, you know, getting on this bus with this suitcase of watches and no clue, and it's a very funny book, but the scenes, especially with Shiva, were so poignant. How do you balance that, getting the tone right between funny and touching?
Yeah, this has been really the sort of challenge of my whole writing existence, if you will. I mean, from the very beginning, I wanted to write books that are entertaining. You know, that's a very big requirement for me. I don't want books to be homework. You know, I want them to be fun. It's the kind of stuff that I want to read, books that make me laugh and smile and recognition. But at the same time, you know, I also want them to be a postcard almost sent to future generations from the time in which I'm writing them. You know, I want these books to describe what the world is like today. And that's what the best fiction does. And you know, I think television has become such a potent force because it so clearly describes a certain era in time. You know, you watch The Sopranos or The Wire and you kind of get an idea of what, you know, certain classes are like in you know, 1990s America or early aughts America. And so, you know, the humor is a kind of way to deliver a snapshot and to deliver the tragedy of the times in which we live in. You know, each book has a different sort of ratio of humor to tragedy. And I think Lake Success, because it's set in an era, it's set at the very, very beginning of America's really sort of jump off the diving board, a real sense of decline in this country. And I think I want to sort of chronicle that.
That line you just said, the tragedy of the times we live in, really has got me thinking, because this book It's about these intimate characters, but you are writing something about America. You know, it's very clear we're getting on this bus, we're driving across America, we're meeting people from all over the country. You've got some great lines in the book like, it wasn't America that needed to be made great again, it was her listless citizens. Have you been able to diagnose what you think might have gone wrong? You know, what has led to this tragedy, as you describe it?
A bunch of things have led to this tragedy. I mean, I think America has always been a country where the institution of slavery has never been adequately addressed. The racism that is so inherent in this country has never been addressed. And look, I mean, European countries obviously all suffer from the same malaise as we do. And there's been, you know, very similar movements in the UK and certainly in Eastern Europe and even in Germany, which has done so much to reckon with its past. But I think in many ways we never have. And all this is burbling up to the surface. You know, when those white supremacists stood up on the Greyhound bus and started talking about horrifying things that they wanted to do to Muslims, Jews, African Americans, although we were in the majority in that bus, we all looked away. Nobody confronted them, even though there were just a few of them. And I think that was a kind of window into where we are as a country. You know, there's the Trump voters were a kind of minority, and yet they hold all the cards today. And that is inherent in the kind of system that we have, I think. And add to that the fact that there is a sense of decline, that we're not as, you know, America has always been a country that sort of believed so inherently in its in the idea that it is an exceptional country, that it's God's country. And the future, it's not going to be just an American world anymore. And I think that's tough for a lot of people, especially people who were groomed to believe that they were God's people, by which I mean white Americans, white male Americans, if you want to get even more specific. And the fact that, you know, the future is going to be so multicultural is, I think, a terrible fear for them. It's a misguided fear, but I think that's what's sort of triggering the love of Trump and the love of all the mini Trumps that have arisen in our country as well.
It's a really sobering conversation we're having, Gary. But
sorry about that. I know it's
no, it's an important one to have. But it struck me that your book, and we're not talking about the ending, but I feel like there's a glimmer of hope there. Do you share that hope for America?
I hope and I do believe that things do work in cycles. The Obama presidency was not perfect, but it was 8 years that were unexpected. You know, if you asked me a decade ago if we were going to have an African-American president, I would have been surprised by it. Of course, I would have also been surprised by a Trump presidency as well and would have dismissed it, the idea of it. But, you know, these things do, I think, happen in cycles. And I am hopeful that, and it's not just people in America. Look, this is happening just about everywhere. You know, look at what just happened in Brazil. And I think it's a kind of worldwide resistance movement that has to be formed to push back against this ugliness. You know, in the past couple of weeks in America, we've seen where this leads. We've seen, you know, it go from tweets to violence, because ultimately it has to end in violence. There's no other way in which this level of hatred can end. And that's a sobering thought. But the idea is, I think, that so many of us are against this, that so many of us can see through the lies. And it really is, forming coalitions not just within our countries but around the world to try to push back.
Look, this book has given us so much to think about, and this conversation has too. Gary Steingart, it's been great to meet you today.
Great to meet you as well.
Gary Steingart's new book is Lake Success. It's published by Hamish Hamilton.